along with Minister so much time. But what I had in my mind was to think, I thought that the approach needed would consider the clause and then what the issues raised in each clause that has been put in our bill. So that was my approach of my document. And then at the end of the day, we said what were the comments relevant with that clause, and also what were the, as our prime or key stakeholder, what were the response from AG, and also what is the advice or advice from coming from us on our side in part of the particular issues relating with the policy issues and legal. Legal, have already said there are issues. For example, in clause 1, as they said, it was the clause 1A is amending section 1. It was the inclusion of the former accounting office and accounting authority, of which they have already given their opinion, because it's related to the legal issue. And also in clause 1D, again, with the definition of a debtor, they have already, in Fatima's document, the legal have already raised their own opinion on matter in terms of the debtor. And then in clause 1G, which we have to consider amending section 1, I think this clause again was talking about desirable audit outcome. And then I think the commenters, as Fatima said, they raised concern that the use of this term might be confusing, because it is not a term that is well understood in the audit field. And as such, they propose the reportable irregularities instead of this term, desirable audit outcome. And the AG have come up with a term, material irregularity, of which I said in my own advice that I think this term, material irregularity, should be supported, because it gives more meaning and significance. Because the report of irregularity forms part of material irregularity description. So that's why I say that I think it is a better word rather than that irreportable irregularity. Because actually it's an umbrella term that also, the reportable irregularity also defines under the material irregularity. So if you describe material irregularity, it also encapsulates the irreportable irregularity, which was suggested by the commenters, that we must use the irreportable irregularities rather than the desirable outcome, audit outcome. Then clause 3.1a, amending section 1. Also, this matter is also, the legal have dealt with this matter because of the legal issue, where I think then it was a matter that was affecting, that it was raised by public protector. In connection, considering the public service, the auditor general rendering services to the public bodies, to the international bodies, actually, yes. So the legal guys have already issued they already gave the recommendation or their audit, their opinion around this issue. And then clause 310B, which amending section 5B1A. Also, this was a clause that was dealing with, because the commenters raised concern with regard to several undesired audit outcome for investigation to an appropriate body. This means the use of appropriate body was the issue here. Then, but don't be sure to say that this term can be replaced or substituted by the relevant law enforcement agents, instead of using appropriate body. That was the, and I think the AG also have agreed on this issue, but also our legal service have already given their own opinion on this issue. Clause 3.1b, amending section 5.1b, here was the debt recovery. I think here what is happening here is the lot of concern that was raised by the, whether you are not trampling on the constitutional mandate of the AG if you are giving the AG the debt recovery. I think we have a great tentative that this AG is no longer going to provide this service of debt recovery. This will be not going to fall under AG. and clause 3.1b, amending 3.5.1b.1a, which requires, or oh, this one was about the satisfactory explanation which was raised, in particular, I think, by the commanders from the Rand Water, that this, I mean, the commanders were peculiar with this reference satisfactory explanation. They argue that this is subjective, as such they propose the satisfactory explanation be defined in be part of the definition. And I think the AG disagrees and support the use of that satisfactory. Further suggests a review of this clause, since it was clear that the ACSA was no longer execute the debt recovery function. And I think the legal have not dealt about this matter. I didn't hear them dealing with that issue that was raised in the public by the public commenters about the satisfactory, the definition of the satisfactory explanation. And clause 3.1b, amending section 5.1b, b. Oh, this is with the referral recovery and certificate, up to the certification. I think they've already said it mouthfully about this, about their opinion, because I refer this matter, I mean, this matter is said, please refer to legal advice in this regard. But the only thing that I think we dealt with it here in the next page was the issue of the referral. In principle, Jay, I think myself, as a policy, as a current advisor, look at the policy issue. I think in principle, I agree with the criteria proposed by the AG. In particular, if I can say, for example, if after 31st of July, that is where the AG signs the audit report and put opinions and recommendations. Then, if you have listened carefully during the public comment, all the commenters, in particular municipalities, they were, even treasurer in particular, they were raising concerns on the duplication of this bill with the current current legislation that are aiming and that are responsible and put structures and processes in order to deal with the recommendation and opinions of the AG after the 1st of July. So by AG, for example, proposing that from 31st of July, which is giving the 6 months until December, where it's going to issue a remedial action, I think they are giving the chance, is giving the chance to the those to the relevant structures, those they support, to recover in terms of the MFPFMA and MFMA, and in also in the municipal systems. And so to me, the period of that 6 months, to me, it is really suitable, because we're giving them a chance, rather than because they raise concerns that this is going to duplicate their role that they are particularly doing in terms of the PFMA and the MFMA. In addition to that, you will know that the Parliament also is given the peace in the form of the PCs, is also given a chance, because around October, November, this is a period of PRRR. So those matters, the matter that we're referring to, the audit outcome, audit opinion by AG and at 31st July, then the AG, the accounting of whoever was supposed to deal with those matters, that's the PFMA, MFMA, supposed to deal with. And then the Parliament was also given a chance, because in October, supposed to deal with those matters that was raised in the audit, in the audit report. Then if they failed until the 6 months, until December, then I think it's fair for AG to give the remedial action. So I say that on principle, I support this, although there is their legal issues. The only thing that I agree with the legal advice is that it's not all matters they have to be referred to the relevant law enforcement agent, because matters that are misfeasance, matters that are financial negligence, for example, those matters they have to be dealt with their own process up to the level that you can refer those matters until to the Public Service Commission. Matters that deal with the financial negligence on the when we are disciplining. There are also structures and institutions that support that proposed by PFMA, the disciplinary measures in order to discipline those employees that are financial negligence. That is the only thing that I think I agree, that you cannot refer any matters to all matters to the relevant law enforcement agents. You can refer those matters that are on criminal activities, but those that are misfeasance, as Advocate Wolfmeyer was presenting, those matters can be dealt instantly, to follow with the KFMA and MFMA. So that's where I'm agree with them, but I also support in principle the timing that the AG is proposing. Because it's giving, I mean, if you recall, honorable members, Treasury, in fact, his proposal, their proposal, they were just against this bill. I mean, in a way that I was interpreting, because they never said we support it, because they said actually what they really said. But we have, we are doing this thing. This is our mandate as the PFMA to do this, I mean, to what we are proposing. That's what apparently they were saying. So we are giving them the chance with their ears that do what you're supposed to do. Parliament, do what you are required to do on October, November, I mean, during your Peter Blast. And then we failed all of you. Then AG came into effect and give them a direction. So that's why, in principle, I support the proposal of the three time. Again, which another one? Okay, here, I don't know the another which page, clause, which supposed to amend. 31B, amending section 31BG. In this section, they were complaining of the absence of internal dispute mechanism, of which I think the legal have dealt with that one. Because if the bill in this current form proposes that if the debtor is aggrieved about the certification of the AG, he can consult, or he can, the only recourse is to approach the High Court. Then the commenters were raised concern with this proposal. This is unfair because considering the cost of consulting of consulting the High Court, and also the time delaying in terms of process, dealing with the High Court. So they propose that there should be a certain form of internal dispute resolution mechanism. I think the legal legal services have dealt with this. They have got their proposal. But my thing, I'm not in a layman's view of not having a law information, law skills. In a policy issue, I thought that because the current proposal of the AG, they say that the certificate, you issue a certificate after, the certificate is informed by the outcomes of the outcome of the investigating, because we refer to the investigating authorities, then the outcome of that investigation, that is where it informs the certificate. We issue the certificate with the prima facie evidence of the debt to the state, how much is owed based on the outcomes of the remedy, or based on the outcome of the investigation. So, to my understanding was that, to me there would be no need for internal resolution mechanism, because if a debtor is aggrieved with such kind of a outcome, then he has to approach the court, then there would be no need for internal resolution mechanism, because actually the certificate you have been issued, this certificate is informed by the outcomes. There is the outcomes of the law enforcement investigation. So that's what I was thinking. I'm not sure whether it's still relevant to have an internal resolution mechanism, because this is informed. The certificate now is no longer informed before by the age. It's informed by the outcomes of the investigation. And another clause that we also considered, if you turn the page, is when this clause 31C amending section 51BCPA. This one was requiring, requires the AG to establish a remuneration committee, which amongst others will be required to make recommendations to the independent commission on the salary allowance and benefits of the AG. We know that several commenters raised concern about the fact that AG is empowered to appoint the committee, which will in turn make recommendation about his or her salary and benefits to that to the independent commission. They therefore propose that the SCOWAC should establish that committee. And then the AG disagree about that proposal. What I've suggested, I said, since the proposed remuneration committee is amongst others expected to make recommendation to independent commission on salaries and allowance and benefits of the AG, its establishment should be done in consultation with the, at least should be done in consultation with the SCOWAC. Let us give him that allowance. You must establish that remuneration committee, but at least in consultation with the, in consultation with the SCOWAC. Because in a way, although I had the AG when we were explaining, but in a way, this could be is really it has the element of a conflict of interest because you this committee is appointed by you. We know that the president started the benefits of the AG currently as this currently been amended by the this new act that is, the act that is I mean the independent is a the current act that the current act that amends the salary and benefits of all Chapter 9 institutions. Before it was regulated by the Public Audit Act, which the committee was responsible to determine such salaries and allowance and recommend to the Speaker and to the President. But currently, there is an independent commission then that recommends to the President for the salaries of all Chapter 9 institutions. Then now, the AG suggests or requires that he should establish the remuneration committee will make a recommendation to the independent commission, which this independent commission recommends the salary to the President. Now, obviously, there is a form of conflict of interest. That's why I suggest that at least there should be in consultation that establishment of such remuneration committee should be done in consultation with the SCOWEC. And also, there was another one, clause 5, amending section 10. No, okay, here there were no comments, but AG raised this, of which I don't see any problem, of which the legal service, I think they also tackled this matter. And then there's a clause 7, amending section 23.6b, the one that deals with the 1% of audit fees. As they said, as the legal things have alluded, I think the only difference now that the Treasury is proposing is to say they must annually agree, they must firstly agree with the AG on how much this 1% audit fee should be, how much would be. So they must be determined upfront. I think that's what AG have raised. That no, that is impossible because now it means that the scope we have to determine the scope of the auditing. How the AG will know the scope of auditing, the time that's going to take in auditing those months by beforehand. It will compromise also its independence. Also, at the end of the day, this will have, as Fatima has explained, if for example it was 120 and then it's 10 million or 100 million, it's 100 million the total current and total current and total operating cost of the municipality, which means that if you want to defray that 20,000 and there was no agreement, it means that there's no money that will be paid to AG. So that will also, as AG suggested, that is in its view, it poses a financial risk to their finances. That it poses, indeed, it poses the financial risk. Then what I've suggested, or what my recommendation in this matter, you recall, honorable members, that the collection of outstanding debts is a talent AG. Since I don't know when, in ages, even every time we consider the annual report, it's always pop up the issue of the collection of debtors. Since the previous 5 years, we recall that in 2016-17 financial year, ABSA was owed about 806 million. Of which it was increase of 19% compared to the previous financial year of 2015-16. And mainly on that 8.6 million, 49% of those debts were coming from local government. And it has been said that the reason of that ascribed to that kind of outstanding debts, that contributing to that kind of, contributing to the outstanding debts in local government, one of them is a lack of capacity to generate revenue. Since they are located in the economic distress religion, those particular municipalities, they can't generate revenue because they are located in the economical distress region. Then, that is the reason, to me, Chair, I think that is the reason why this section 23 came into being. Because each and every year, I don't know why this section says, if the Treasury is on the opinion that, I'm not sure why that the relevance of that clause, I mean that section, in section 26, because in my understanding, each and every year, Treasury releases the list of financial distressed municipalities. So Treasury knows why they have an opinion, although he releases that list of financial distressed municipalities released by Treasury yearly, each and every year. So he has to, Treasury has to be in the opinion that this municipality is in the financial distress, of which the list is releasing at least each and every year of financial distressed municipalities in for South Africa. And as you said, I mean, for example, and we know, honorable members, each and every year, I think in 2013-14, honorable thing you recall, we made a recommendation in this committee in the 2013-14 based on the 2011-12 annual report of the AG that in order to address this challenge of outstanding things impacting the local government, then the OG must meet with the finance minister of that time and the local, the minister of the local government and the personal affairs in order to address this 1% audit fees. And then that was our position, because we said that we supported the AG that Treasury must pay AG this particular fund. Then, as a result, what I'm saying here is that indeed, if we can allow this situation, this proposal of Treasury, then it will put the AG, I mean, it will pose financial risk to the AG. And also, we have to recall, honorable members, that our role, our mandate as the committee, as they derived in Section 261 of the PAA, is to assist, protect the AG in order to ensure its independence, partial and dignity and effectiveness. That is our mandate given by the Public Audit Act. Whatever we do, we have to do in order to ensure that we protect, we assist the ACFA in order to ensure its independence, impartiality, dignity and effectiveness. And I think that would be before the last. There's also another proposal, there was another comment which emanated from Clause 9.1A, which amending Section 40. This requires the DAG to establish audit committee to appoint members of the audit committee in consultation with the AG. Several commenters have raised concern with a possible conflict of interest here. But what we see, what I said, you said, is that, okay, I think the committee mandated me in order to check whether this will align with what is currently happening, what is currently happening in other, in the broad public institution. What I've said, I propose that the amendment be supported in the current form. The responsibility given to AG to appoint members of the audit committee in consultation with the AG is no different with the current practice in happening other outcomes of the state as outlined in the PFMP. Treasury Regulation 312, which gives rise to Section 77 of the PFMA, empowers accounting officers of the institution to appoint the audit committee members in consultation with the relevant executive authority. I think it's similar with what is proposed in this bill, because DAG is empowered to appoint the members of the audit committee in consultation with the AG. So I think it's similar. The current practice is similar to what's happening in the other departments and other state-owned enterprise, for example. Clause 10, amending Section 52, is about the regulation. Even here, as the legal services are, the current practice is that the Department of Public Institution, which is the department which is main responsible for implementation of the certain legislation, normally P1 was also responsible for making regulations. For example, National Treasury was so responsible for implementation of a PFMA, it also made Treasury regulations. Treasury regulations were made by National Treasury. So there's no deviation from what AG is proposing, from what is currently happening. Because actually, normally, the Treasury regulations are being made or promulgated by the department who's main responsible for the legislation. As I made an example that, for example, Treasury regulations were made by National Treasury in response to the PFMA. Thank you, Chair. These are all my inputs.
Any additions, sir?
addition?
No.
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 Thank you. Thanks, Scotty. Thanks, Fatima. We're going to try and deal with this thing and get it done and give you guys a mandate. Can we go to that page, page 16, the way forward before, of Libra.
Chair, can I just interrupt on for one moment on the last issue that Corley raised on the deputy AG appointing the audit committee? You'll see that it isn't in our notes. The reason being, and I know people sometimes get very confused with the intricate drafting style of square brackets and underlining, but in fact what we sought to do is to make it the Auditor General and not the Deputy. So where you see Deputy over there, it's in square brackets, which means it's been removed. So there's no need to even discuss it. The commentators made a mistake in believing that Deputy over there meant that we're inserting. An insertion is the underline, a deletion is the square bracket, which is why it doesn't appear in our notes, but it's a non-issue.
Chair, I think that I'm sorry for doing it. I didn't want to stand up like a point of order or something, but I think it is it's crucial that we don't find a situation. I think that the department should actually, or fully actually, sat down with the legal advisors before the time, because you know we sit in a situation now where you get the feeling of, oh, the legal advisors didn't cover this. This is my opinion, you know, and I think we should really, when it comes to us here, that they should have bounced feelings off to see what is the legal side of what the recommendation is from the committee side. Because, I mean, there's things contradicting one another now. You know, what do you go for? Do you go for what the committee side is saying, or do we go for what the legal side is saying? I just wanted to say or stand up in a point of order just
now. All right. Now, I thought our understanding was we'd allow everybody, including the AG, to say their say. At the end of the day, we're going to kick all of them out, and it's our decision. So Goli can disagree. They can disagree with AG.
Okay.
AG can disagree with... It's their problem.
Okay.
At the end of the day, we'll kick all of them out, not physically, but at the end of the day, it's our decision.
Okay.
Yeah, so... But it does help, I agree, it does help if people talk and we don't have it. But I wouldn't die if there was disagreement amongst... Because after all, that is what stimulates debate, I think, when we have various views for us as the MPs. So. But the note is taken. Let's then start and try and get this thing done. The intention, let me remind honourable members, is that when we leave here at the end of the day, we want to be able to say to the drafters, this is our view, especially around the policy, commas and full stops we're really not interested in. This is our policy view, go and reduce that into writing in the relevant clauses. The first one is whether the former AOs be included to the extent that they failed to act. And you spoke to it earlier on, when you were going line by line. My view is that what you were explaining is correct, that the former AOs I suppose we said it because it's retrospective. If it was in his term, he must come and account. I agree that there's no retrospective in terms of going to 100 years. But if we do it in 2018 and it refers to a 2017 matter, even if that guy is gone in 2017, I think we should call him back. So I have no problem. I don't know if other members have problems. So I agree with your one.
Chair, there's a legal problem with your example. If a person has now left, the way this is crafted is to give the accounting officer notice that the irregularity has occurred and then sufficient and ample opportunity to fix it. So an accounting officer who's left prior to the audit report being issued with recommendations wouldn't have had the benefit of that opportunity, so it wouldn't apply there. When we say that we can hold old AOs accountable, it would only be those that resign after the conclusion of the six-month period following the issuing of the remedial action. So if I'm AO today, remedial action is issued today, I then have 6 months to act. If I don't act in those 6 months, and after the 6 months I've resigned, then the AG can still warn me over the coals. But if I've resigned during the 6 months, the AG can't do anything, because by the AG's own remedial action document, it would give me that 6 months. So my simple defense in court would be, I didn't do it because I didn't have the full 6 months. So it would only affect those that have resigned after that 6 month period.
And I'll allow honorable things, but let me tell you what I thought we were trying to do. A. O. Vincent Smith is in correctional services this year. A. G. comes and finds a disclaimer. I then leave correctional service and I go to SAS before the 6 months is over. A. G. is only going to report on it 6 months down the line, and when they come to scope, it's no longer A. G. Accounting authority, but it's the accounting authority carpet. My understanding was, if in that time we found that the accounting authority didn't do what he or she was supposed to do, the argument can't be, well, you know, I've only taken over today, but done better than it yesterday. We must go and get this. That's what I thought we were trying to achieve. Not what action the accounting authority did afterwards. I'm saying that's what we thought. Now, if you thought differently to what we thought, the question is, can we fix it up? But what I'm adamant about is that if Vincent left before, even before the AG's report comes to Parliament, Vincent should be found somewhere. Because these guys leave one department, go to another department, leave national, go to province, leave province and go to local, as a way of escaping. That was my thinking. Now, when we came with the certification, maybe it made it a bit more complex. But my initial thinking was to, and even that person, you're probably going to come and say, but he's not guilty. He's guilty to the extent that he or she did not prevent. Because remember, the accounting order must prevent. We didn't say he committed a crime. If we can prove that in his term he never prevented unauthorized expenditure, he should be held before the court. So that was my thinking. But give us an explanation and then we'll ask other members. My view is, you know, the thing of format doesn't work in my view. I don't even know why we brought it up, but I understand your legal story. But there can be a form of anything, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to taxpayers' money. But let's take things, let's take our thinking of what it is that we want them to put in, and then they can go and craft it. But we'll take all the members here about this thing, about what was our intention when we brought this form and story up. Singh, and then Rubazan, and then Carter, and then Adams, if you want to say anything.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just thinking aloud here as well. I think the intention of the committee was not to allow people who have been actively involved in not doing their work to get away with it when they go elsewhere. But I think we got to broaden that, because we're assuming that that individual is still within the public service. If that individual today goes to private sector, the head of Department of Correctional Services, goes to private sector. What is there in law that we can do to hold that person accountable or criminally responsible for any action or inaction during his or her term of office? Is there something in law? It may not be, and will it only be a financial loss? Because I think that can be the only thing that you can hold a person responsible for, personally accountable. So that's the dilemma I think we have. Because we've had people, many times, you know, I've had one from education, she was in my department, we got rid of her for certain things, and there she was in Mpumalanga, a senior. There's no blacklist, there's no nothing that's available within the Public Service Commission, which we've spoken to them about, to say, this person is blacklisted because this person was suspended or whatever from Department AOP. So I think that's how do you get it? I understand the retrospective and prospective. Because the retrospective here doesn't mean that we're going to go look at an auditor 20 years ago, AG's finding, but we're going to look for the person. the individual. But even that will require clarity in terms of law. And I think that's what we're looking for. We don't want people to get away with murder as they have been doing currently. You resign. In Durban at the moment, in other places, people are just resigning. Even yesterday or the day last week, people are resigning. Right? And they're going. So what happens?
Thank you, Chairperson. No, Chairperson, I totally agree with you. I even wrote, I had a concern with this will take place after the six, the SOAS started having a problem, after the 6 months period following the issue in Fatima, because then I thought maybe during my absence you shifted, because it was exactly what we said, what is being, what the chair is saying, that rather you work around it to ensure that while that person is still there, whether it's within the financial year or within the term, because you have said it, Fatima, that you'll find that within the 10 points, it's only 1 point that reflects on the financial losses, which then allow the AG to issue the certificate. But the rest of the points, the AO was supposed to take actions within that. And based on that, this particular somebody is no longer there. So, but we are releasing him if we are saying after the 6 month period, they said they are for a problem, Chairperson.
If you have any comment on that one.
So I've got to agree with you that at the end of the day, the buck stops with the accounting officer. Whether he is he's resigned during the time of the audit or after the audit, or just before, for that specific period, he was the accounting officer and the buck stops with him. So I absolutely agree. Agree to the new committee.
All right, you want to talk to us, Fatima? You know the difficulty is here you talk about recovery. You see, because there's the recovery leg, which I accept and everybody accepts, but there's the liability leg also. So I don't know if you want to talk to us, if you understand what we're trying to say, then we can legally go and craft it and come with option one and option two or whatever the case is. Recovery leg, nobody has a problem. It's the liability leg of the accounting authority that we have a problem.
No, Chair, I'm in full agreement. The problem is that the proposal of a three-tier approach is what is irreconcilable with what you're saying now. Remember, my view right from the beginning was that the audit report and the recommendations must be binding from day one. My concern was, why are we giving this long opportunity of the 6 months in any case, which is what I did raise. But the AG's office had very strong views on it. The AG said that we must allow the law to take its course and give the AOs an opportunity to fix things in terms of the existing financial laws. So I do agree to an extent with that. However, I think, so now to overcome the difficulty, your problem when it's taken on review is that the old AO, who's no longer there, is going to say, well, no remedial action was issued against me. I resigned before that 6 month period when the remedial action was issued. And if the remedial action wasn't issued to me in my capacity as AO, then the certificate that follows could never be for me. So that is the way in which it's crafted now by the AG. That is the legal difficulty you have. However, Chair, I said in my presentation that we mustn't focus too much on the financial recovery aspect, because then we're almost letting the AOs off the hook for everything else. So as you speak now, perhaps an alternative is to say that in terms of the remedial powers, and we, Dutch and I, discussed the section where we're going to put remedial powers in as a standalone under the functions and powers, and then link the remedial to the recovery later on. It may be simply to say that the AG can issue remedial action at any time.
Yes.
In this context of a recovery, we'll do it with the long rigmarole. But currently, the way the financial management, the PFMA and MFMA is drafted, and we'll go in and check it, is that non-compliance constitutes financial misconduct, right then and there. So the moment the AG says in the report you haven't done what you were supposed to do, notwithstanding anything else, at that point, the financial misconduct has been committed. So maybe the remedial action must then be immediate in respect of some of those financial misconducts. And there, then the AG, or the finding at least, and then the AG must give a particular time period in terms of which the accounting officer must act. So you fail to prevent this because you didn't have proper systems in place, so you now need to put proper systems in place within 6 weeks or whatever the case may be. So we can try and craft something like that, or you need to deal with the official that is responsible for that financial misconduct through an HR process. But this is precisely, Chair, my concern about this long time period and the fact that we watered down the initial report. But we will go back to the drawing board and try to accommodate both situations.
And of course,
yeah, Chair, you see, the issue of prescription will also come in here somewhere along the line. You have 3 years non-recovery. So think about that. But you see, if you start bringing the issue of remedial action, isn't there a constitutional problem? I think you've skipped as way forward, Chair. You've skipped the whole thing about the constitutionality of this thing, because I think it's quite clear that it is what we are doing is constitutional. So although you spent a lot of time in the beginning of your report to talk about the Constitution, 181.4, I think we all agree that we're on the right track here. But we're now looking at the details, and that the devil is in that detail. But if you start bringing terms like remedial action and so on and so forth, does it not bring in the other dimension of are we empowered to do that in this legislation? Is it not a constitutional thing? How is remedial action crafted when it comes to the public protector?
First of all, let me just give you maybe I'm dumb or I'm talking cross purposes. You know, 1st of January year X, Vincent Smith is the accounting officer. He, through negligence or maybe even through active participation, causes the department to lose $1,000. He leaves. Carter comes in. Auditor General comes during Carter's time. But because he's working 12 months back, isn't it? He picks up that, you know what, on the 1st of January, there was R1,000 that was taken to Carter. And then he gives Carter 6 months to fix it up, as the law says there, 6 months. When he comes back in 6 months, what I'm arguing is, Carter can't turn around and say, it wasn't done by me, it was done by somebody called Vincent, and therefore my hands are tied. That's what we're saying. We're saying Carter must be able to go and find Vincent as long as he's alive. That's something to you, simply that's what we are saying. And that is what we meant when we said former OAs. Maybe we should say former employees, because it might not have been the AO that did it in that year. Maybe it was the bus driver. But still, Carter will go for that bus driver if he's alive. So maybe the confusion came when we said AO. What we are saying is anybody that was guilty, Carter, if that person is alive, she must find him. If that person is in another department, as Singh says, let's find him and blacklist him. So if you can find a way of putting that into what we are saying, if it's not already covered, please do so. If it's already covered, then we'll be covered.
Chase, 100% VOV. This was my whole legal explanation of the strict liability. That confusion crept in where people thought that the accounting officer is being held liable for something that the accounting officer didn't cause, for the loss that accounting officer didn't cause. So in your example, the AG comes in and does the report and recognizes the loss. The recommendation is that Carter must go and find out who caused the loss. In that investigation, Carter finds out that it's Vincent Smith that caused the loss. Vincent Smith is no longer in the department. The law already allows that you can act against any responsible person. They don't have to be an official. So in other words, when we come back eventually on the 12-month period, Carter's defense in law can never be that I didn't act because Vincent Smith is not here. Her defense must be, we found Vincent Smith liable in law. We instituted proceedings. Vincent Smith had a valid defense. We lost the case, and that is why there was no recovery. So we are on the same page.
Okay. All right. Then we are happy. Your next one, can we move on to the number?
Yes.
That is where the issue, huh? That's what we're dealing with now, right?
Yeah.
Where the issue of mandatory, okay, let me allow other people to talk on this whole issue of mandatory, discretionary, just talk in layman's language. These people will try and craft what it is that we're thinking of. Let's start with Sing and we'll go around. If there's any comment to make around this mandatory and discretionary and that whole issue.
That's number 6, page
5.
Yeah.
No, page
16B.
No, 16B,
but yeah, I'm thinking
I mean,
that
the
narrative
is on
in the main document.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, I've been a lot of things about that. What has to do with here about the mandatory audit that Dr. Naidoo, I think Dr. Naidoo makes an important point, but as far as my layman thinking of this, I mean the auditor general, the office of the auditor general is responsible for all audits. It's here. Well, every auditor, everything else. Now whether the office of the auditor general or the person of the auditor general and the staff employed in that office can or cannot, because of staff constraints or whatever, do a particular audit on a museum or a marble club or something like that, that doesn't absolve them from the responsibility that's given to them in the Constitution. Now, you know when the auditor says they disagree because they may not have the capacity, I think the ultimate responsibility resides with the office of the Auditor General.
Mm.
Not necessarily with the staff within that office, because they are allowed to outsource. So I think all audits are mandatory, and it's a responsibility of the Office of the Auditor General to undertake audits on all these institutions in terms of the Constitution. Where was it? Section 188.1c. Where was that? The Auditor General must audit and report on the accounts, financial statements, and financial management of all national, provincial, state departments, all municipalities, and any other institution accounting entity required by national or provincial legislation to be audited by the Auditor General. Now, what does he refer to? I think we don't, I've never experienced in the past where we say go and audit so-and-so, and we might ask for a performance audit, we might ask for a special audit, but we don't just say, as a matter of course, we take it that it's their responsibility to audit everything that under the state, quote-unquote, unless you can point to me to say, no, well, they can choose. Can they choose? I don't think they have a choice.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to be convinced.
Have you heard anything from Inspector? Carson?
Do we have? No, thank you, Chair. No, mine was on the discretionary. That at what point then the Auditor General will decide that I'm not going to adhere to the Constitution, because it is the Constitution. Whether they've got the capacity or they don't have the capacity, it's none of what is being said by the Constitution. However, though, having said that, then it becomes so contrary where the Auditor General sort of raised his own resources, the fiscus. And Fatima says, but they can, like other chapter nine institutions, to get into the appropriations. Now, if then that they are able to do that, that deletes the capacity issue, because then you can have, it means you can use those sources to ensure that you don't opt out of the mandatory obligation.
Let me tell you what I understood. Again, that's why I'm glad that the Auditor General is here. You know, when it first came up to me, I thought the Auditor General, when he was talking about discretionary, was saying that discretionary annually. Because he was saying, you know, you go to a library that has one transaction. Currently, as things stand, I've got to audit that transaction every year. That is what he was complaining about. And he was saying to us, guys, but is it not possible for some sort of leeway where I can say I'm going to do, whether you call it a high level or a flimsy audit, I don't want to downplay it, but instead of an in-depth audit, because it's got so few transactions, or it's so minimum, 100 rand for the year, is it possible for me to say, on that one, I'll just send a first-year clerk. He'll go, article clerk, do whatever, and come back, as opposed to me sending an article clerk and a senior. That's what I thought this question really was about. If it's different, then it's different. But that's what I thought the AG was saying to us. Mandatory, I agree that everything that is public money must be audited. Now, whether it's audited by him directly or audited by him delegating to somebody, it's neither here nor there. What we were also saying is that at some point we're going to ask him to audit the SOEs and not outsource the SOEs. So that's what I understood it, but I see you guys shaking your heads and I didn't understand the AG. But I can tell you that the AG's big problem is if you go to the Heritage Foundation, it's got one transaction. And according to the law, he must send his whole troops in there. And he was saying to us, guys, give me the leeway not to send all my troops there. That's what I understood by discretionary. Unless I was reading it wrong. If there was another reason for discretionary, then let's talk about that one. But I thought that's what the main source is. But let me tell you what I feel. Anything that deals with public money must be audited by the AG. Not physically him in all instances. In certain instances, you can give it to Deloitte and whoever you want to give it to for the purposes of small business and so on. And at some point, we are going to say to him, all SOEs must be audited by you. No choice. I don't think it's there currently, but I'm saying that's where we're going to. So advise me on this discretionary thing of yours, as you guys saw it. And maybe the AG must tell us what they understood when he came to complain about discretionary.
Okay, it's nice to have, but we constrain by what the Constitution says as a supreme law. The Constitution specifically provides for mandatory, and therefore discretionary. So the intention in the Constitution is not that every single organ of state or institution that gets money from the state must be audited. So you'll see that there are two provisions. There's 1881, which lists the mandatory, which is your national department, your provincial department, and then any legislation that says you must audit. So if the Library Act says you must audit that library, then you must audit that library. Then your SOE and the municipalities, your SOEs and all these other sorts of bodies fall under subsection 2, which is discretionary. So the AG may, of his own volition or because there's a request or because they want to do a special audit, but there is nothing in the Constitution that compels them to audit. Now, what the AG was asking us to do was two things. One, on the mandatory one, to use a slightly lesser threshold for the audit, and that we've included and that everybody's happy with. So that's fine. So they're going to now go in with one person instead of 10 persons because we changed the framework slightly.
So that's already fine. Catered for.
That's already catered for. There's no dispute there. Section 20, there's no dispute.
All right. Yeah.
What is in dispute now? Is that in terms of the discretionary ones, the other thing that we've done is we've empowered him to regulate in terms of how to exercise that discretion. Because you don't want a case where everybody comes to say, please audit me, or other people say, please audit this institution, and just willy-nilly the AG decides if he wants to do it or if he doesn't. So they're going to, in the league, speak to size, the amount of money that institution may be making per year and whatever the case may be. So the long and short is that the Constitution provides for these discretionary audits. There's nothing that prevents us from saying in the Act, which is what I was trying to say, there's nothing that prevents us from saying here that all SOEs must be audited and included as a mandatory. But the AG has objected to that and they can speak to why they've objected to that. What we needed a decision on is that going forward, in terms of new legislation, whether we can build in a role to say where a committee is considering a bill, where Parliament is considering and processing legislation, that they at least consult with the AG so that the AG can say, you know, that's a really small entity. You don't require us to audit over there. Perhaps you can build in something that says the AG won't audit, but the AG will exercise a little bit of an oversight role, or whatever the case may be. So there is indeed two, discretionary and mandatory, and if you want to change it, you would also need a constitutional amendment if your view is that everybody must be audited.
No, I hear what you're saying. So what was the political decision you wanted us to take?
So the decision that I want you to take is whether you are in agreement that we build something into the Act to say that we, Parliament, wants to make it mandatory. So
if
you want to make the SOEs mandatory, that you would be compelled to consult with the AG. The AG can never override, yes, the AG can never override it, it's just consultation.
Okay. No, I'm happy with that wonderful thing.
Yeah, Chair, why not the other way? I know Parliament will have the final say, but if the AG decides, you know, these 20 organizations are too small and I want to do, because I heard the AG talking about cluster and doing it once in 5 years, something like that.
Yes.
Then the AG must come to the committee, to Parliament, and say, listen, I've considered these organizations. There are 10 libraries here. There's really nothing in it. Can I do this audit every 5 years? And then Parliament will say, you know, there must be an obligation both ways. I don't think you must saddle us now with the responsibility as Parliament of you know, considering which ones we need and we don't need, because we don't have the facts before us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have the facts, the size of the institution and organization. Rather, it comes from this. If the AG decides I'm not going to do our to audit organization B every 3 years, come to the board and say, listen, I in considering this, you know, what's my constitutional responsibilities, I'm asking that I don't waive this for this year and that year on the basis of some proposal, some recommendation. Because it's the smaller organization where the stealing takes place. And many of these entities have boards. You know, you don't need a full board, 6 members, 7 members going to meetings, getting paid and all. We've got to look after the pennies so that the pounds can take care of themselves. So I'm saying, let's put the obligation then on the audit agenda. Come to us, come to SCOAG or come to whoever, but come to Parliament and say, these are the ones I don't want to do now, I'll do it every 3 years.
Okay, for the record, we agree with you. Where a committee in its normal course of work wants to put in a clause that says the audit agenda must audit, surely you can just make a form, they can just make a form for the audit agenda. Like the way we do this in the legislation for the Mandela Foundation that has one person. Should we put master, should we put may? We don't have a problem that you can incorporate that one. The second one, Honourable Singh, I think we support that one. Where the AG is that, you know what, it's not a waste of time, but it should be done more productively. He must come to us, or she must come to us, and say, in these 10, we don't want to go there every year. You must come to the stakeholders, COAC or something like that. And then we will give the blessing.
Yes.
So incorporate those both.
That's fine. We'll just amend Section 20 to allow for the consultation.
Okay. Happiness?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's it. All right. Okay. That was a big one. The one around the three tiers. And you and Goli are having your problems there. Goli feels that the whole 12 months is the way to go. You were feeling that 6 months is too much already, but you live with 6 months. And that's the decision we need to take. That empty, that they've argued their case. I don't know if you want any clarity. I mean, Goli is saying, AG comes, finds something, he goes to the accounting office, and he says, do something about it.
Mm.
So he comes 6 months after anyway, isn't it?
Mm.
We haven't done anything, gives him another. In other words, allow the accounting authority to do what they're supposed to do.
Mm.
Having failed over 12 months, then he acts.
Mm.
That's what Goli is saying.
Mm.
Satima is saying, no, but when he does the audit, he does the management letter anyway, and he talks to them on that side.
Mm.
So when he comes 6 months down the line,
yes,
they should have done something about it.
Mm.
Why must they wait another 6 months to do something about it? And then, of course, it gets complicated by the ones you are raising around non-financial. I think we agree. When it's non-financial, it must be dealt with immediately. Immediately, there can't be a 6-month waiting period if there's no policy for firing people.
Mm.
It must be done immediately. This thing of 6 months and 6 months, I think, in the main, is about recovery process of it. What are we saying to these people? Because it's this whole three-tier thing that you guys are talking about, isn't it? About when does the AG step in, basically.
Yeah.
So what we're all saying is that he must step in immediately where it's non-financial. There's no, as you were saying, no HR policy. Surely, even at management, let's just say, he should be able to say, when we discussed this thing, I said to them, I'm going to put it as an emphasis of matter. So when he comes 6 months down the line, surely he should be able to say, it was an emphasis of matter, why have you still not done your policies, let's put it for want of a better word. When it comes to collections, after 6 months, he'll say, have you found Carter or have you found somebody else? She's saying at that point he must issue. You saying he must give another 12 months. What are we saying? I think we're all in agreement with the policy one. Find a way of putting it in.
Can I just clarify? The issue is not the time. It's fine. I understand the AG's view that the timeline fits into what they're currently doing. Because to change, shift the timeline is going to have resource implications. My issue is only with the final step of stage three. That the AG is saying, when I come back after the 12 months, if you still haven't done anything, because you've now had 12 months and you still haven't done anything, what I'm going to do then is not issue a certificate yet. I'm first going to refer to another body, being the SIU or Hawks or whoever it is. Following that outcome, which we don't have a time frame for, that's when I'm going to issue the certificate. That, Chair, is my fundamental problem, is that the AG is placing a reliance on this other investigative body, as opposed to saying, I will send for investigation the moment it comes to my knowledge that something is untoward here. And when the 12 months expires, I must be ready to issue my certificate, whether it's based on that outcome or that show dress or on whatever it is. Because the difficulty that you're going to have legally also is that you may have issued a needle action saying, recover for the irregularity or the fruitless and wasteful. At the end of the 12 months, when you refer to the Hawks say this is a financial misconduct case in terms of the PFMA. This is not a case of corruption. There's no prima facie evidence here of corruption. This is just an official that didn't do what they were supposed to do in terms of the law. So this falls outside of our purview and mandate. We're not going to take this matter any further. We close our file before we even start. Then the AG has nothing then to act on, because the AG is saying, I can only act when another body tells me that my finding is valid. I'm saying your finding is valid from the day you make that finding in your report. What is making you doubt your own report 12 months later? That is my difficulty.
Agree.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, 7 minutes.
Yeah, we agree.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah.
I'll give half that.
No, that's what I'm saying. They must find
a
way of crafting
it.
Yes,
definitely crafting.
What we are thinking is correct. Then.
Mm.
And we also agree that he's going to send it to the Hawks or anybody else. But that is further in-depth stuff. But for the stuff that he picked up, surely after 12 months you should be saying to him, now you're going to be accountable for it. So find a way of crafting. Yes, Honourable Customer.
Sorry, Chief. No, I mean, I absolutely agree with that, but there's just one extra point I want to make, and it might sound a bit crazy. And that is, if anyone is familiar with ISO standards, okay? ISO standards are very clear. If they come in and they audit your factory or your production line or whatever, by tomorrow morning when they leave, you get a report. Within 7 days, you have to respond to that report. And you've got to start saying, what are you doing to change your 5 W's? What are you doing? Who is doing it? By when is it going to be done? So, I mean, I also have a major problem with the timeline. Because if it's going to happen in 6 months' time, the problem is going to continue. You immediately need to actually respond. The AG doesn't have to go back there, but they have to send what they are doing to fix it, their 5 W's, they need to send that back. So I really think that we should consider looking at adding that type of remedial in as well.
What we're saying is that we agree with you on the timeline factor. We will give you leeway for 12 months. Beyond 12 months, the AG must act. You just put that into whatever. And the argument of the Hawks or anybody else, It can be parallel, it can be run on somewhere else, but in 12 months time, the 18 months, there must be consequences.
Mm.
That's what we are saying. Mm. All right, D?
But just, yes, my concern is that, I got a concern with this. That certificate that age is issuing, it has a state, it said it's a prima facie proof that is also having an amount that is owed by the accounting office. I mean, that amount to the state, that is a debt to the accounting office. That amount, how does that amount being derived? Because after the investigation, I think the horse or whatever, as I would say, that here is the amount that is corrupted, whatever, the term that says 100 million, but the AG's opinions about the sampling is not a correct amount that would be coming from the certificate, that would be written in the certificate. I think that was another reason maybe that it was relevant to say that this, you issue a certificate after the outcome of the investigation, so that the other ones will say, this is the amount that SIU or HOS will say that it has been misappropriated or corrupted. But in the if you issue a certificate based on the AG's opinion, that is amount that is based from the sampling that AG is doing when he's auditing.
Difficult, but you're correct. You're correct. But look, go and do some work on it because we don't really open it. I mean, if I had to answer Goli, just on top, thinking on top of my head, and this is what I raised earlier on, maybe, you know, if we had a two-tier certification, in other words, I always argue if the AG puts it in his report that there was theft, he must have had evidence that there was theft, but he's saying this is the theft that I picked up. It's only the tip of the iceberg, in my estimation. There could be more. I've always argued, then make a certificate for the tip, and then go to the relevant somebody to do the other.
Yeah.
So if it's a two-tier thing, so then it resolves the problem. But I don't know if it's practical. But for me, because if he wants to do it that way, he must go and defend why this is done. Because this becomes a digital charge, if you take it in a legal method. We've charged you for this, but in the process there's been a decent amount of added. So for me that would be the theory. Whether it is legally possible or in legislation is something that we're tasking you guys to do, as long as you understand what our thinking is.
In some cases it's very easy to determine. So for example, if you have irregular expenditure as a result of non-compliance with an SEM process where you gave a bid to bidder 2, instead of bidder 1 who scored the highest.
Yeah.
Right? Then you simply do a subtraction there.
Correct.
If you use bidder 1, what would you have saved?
Yeah.
So the difference between those two sums is the loss. So in those examples, it's easy and the AG must act. It could be the reason you gave it to bidder 2 instead of bidder 1 is because there's a corrupt relationship, and that corrupt relationship manifests itself in many different forms in the institution. You've actually given them 20 other contracts which the AG hasn't investigated. But that's fine, because where you have that suspicion, you are now referring to the hawks. But I'm going to punish you for whatever it is I pick up in the hope that that deters you from doing anything further. That was my understanding. Also, nothing prevents the AG's office from attempting to determine that sum using experts or whatever. That will be part of the forensic audits that they will undertake.
Yeah, Chair, I think our concern, and I'm sharing it here, is we are saying, why wait? Why bring this whole legal thing of 12 months and 16 months and 24? The horse would have bolted. Or I'll give you a typical case. The AG went in to investigate the municipality, and this is what they told us. A clinic was supposed to have been built. Right? The material that was all invoiced and everything else for the construction of the clinic, you'll know the area, was used at the mayor's house. The company said, we took this material to this address, and that address is the mayor's house. Now, by the time the AG finishes that report and we wait for all the niceties and it goes to council and it comes back to us and it takes you another year. I mean, here's prima facie evidence of this. So why can't you act? As even while you're still completing your audit, you know, you're full on.
Mm-hmm.
You say, why can't we ask? Hey, there's something wrong here now. Let's see. I think that's...
Yeah, that's the power that he's been asking for. That's the power that you give him. Yeah. So find a way of. You'll come and tell us where you put it in when we come back, and we'll argue whether it's strong enough or whether it covers our concern. With all the legal licenses, let's take call and we'll respond.
No, I concur, Chair, with the leaders, because I think actually in the last meeting when AG came in to present about this, we agreed on this issue. And we even inserted known because when they say
yes,
section 5.1a, they say subject to refer any alleged, it says any known alleged as suspected material regulation. So I think it covers, we can have the two separate specifications in.
Yeah.
So I think we suggested that known, insertion of the known,
correct,
not only alleged and suspected material regulation.
Okay. You will convert that into... Fatima, you'll convert that for us. You'll put it in.
No, it's fine, Chief. My original recommendation to the AG's office was, let's have your three-tier process. You wanted like that recommendation, remedial, then action. But let's not put time frames on there, because there's some matters that are so obvious up front.
Yeah.
Those matters you go in. So I say to them, in their recommendations, when they do their audit report, there your recommendation will be within the next 7 days. So I know things cause a lot.
Yeah.
Right, because Singh didn't pitch up for the conference that he was supposed to attend. So as the AG, I know that already. He must be held liable. There's no investigating who didn't pitch for the conference. Then the recommendation must be that you act against him, or you start proceedings against him within the next 7 days.
Yeah.
Should you fail to do something, to issue remedial action, that you must comply in 6 weeks. Should you fail to comply in 6 weeks, then we act against you, AO. That was my initial thing, and I said to Marissa that the AG can be convinced simply to say that in certain circumstances, the 6 months, 12 months may be reasonable, and in those ones, you'll just need to apply your mind. In others, a shorter time frame may be more suitable.
Amal Khalaka, everybody happy?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Go and try and put that into words for us, and then we'll talk about it when we come back. D, whether the term appropriate bodies in relation to referral should be listed, my own argument is no. Because you see, if you list them, tomorrow we form another body, then they're going to say it's not there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just leave it as appropriate.
No.
Yes, ma'am?
No, Chair, I will go for Goli's proposal.
Which
says, instead of using the word appropriate, why don't you just leave it as a relevant law enforcement agency? It's open.
Where is appropriate and relevant next to the first? All we're saying is, don't put the actual name of the...
Down,
yeah. All right. So relevant, appropriate, put, but they seem to think that the relevant... You were saying relevant, no?
Yes,
I
think the relevant
yes,
law
I don't think we'll sleep about that. Happy?
I just want to know, is there any reference to law enforcement agencies anywhere in our literature? What is a relevant law enforcement agency? Can it not be any other agency?
It's crime intelligence.
Why
it's
should we
leave
it out of I'm just saying,
we're
saying relevant, we mustn't constrain ourselves. If
what are we saying? We're not saying relevant lawyer. We're saying relevant authority.
Relevant what?
It should be relevant authority for me, because...
Yeah,
because law enforcement is what?
Yeah, relevant authority makes more sense,
yeah.
Because there might be times they want to refer it, for example, to the Competition Commission.
Correct.
For collusion. So they're not really a law enforcement agency to do things.
Well, okay.
Right.
E, whether the debt collection should go to the Treasury or to the Executive Authority. I thought last time we agreed it was going to the Executive Authority.
Say, Chair, if the Executive Authority is involved, when we mentioned that point, how do you bring that aspect? If the EA himself or herself is responsible for the loss, I instruct you, DC, come here, I'll give it to you in writing, give this tender to Cindy. Right? It's a more expensive. And they're doing it.
Yeah.
Not that they're not doing it, they're doing it. Yamal, Kumbaya.
No, but...
Then the president, or what
no, no. Did we not say relevant authority and or parliament? I mean executive authority,
yes.
But somewhere we said in parliament. Or if it's not, then maybe it should be to the executive authority notifying parliament. Because I can tell you there's two, three cases
as I speak,
yes,
where the minister is Christian. So we should be saying to the minister, because that's the gender, and also to Parliament. That is why we have things like the commission inquiries and those type of things. So somewhere say, I think the broad principle is, under normal circumstances, of course, to the minister, but where appropriate, also to the legislature. Because I mean, that's going to be the AG's discretion, because she's the one that's asking for the collection. So he must be given that leeway.
Okay, so just coming on that one, if I may.
Yes.
Okay, we find Polly guilty. He's an official.
Yes.
Right. The EA, in his capacity as EA, would start instituting legal proceedings. Obviously, the state attorney will not. Right?
Mm-hmm.
To institute proceedings to recover the money from them. I'm the EA. Who will institute proceedings against me?
Mm-hmm.
I can institute against you in my capacity as EA. If you summon everything. But who will now collect from? Who will be responsible to say, Mr. EA, you owe us 5 million rand, you haven't paid legal fees? Mr. President, Mr. former President, this 15 million legal fees was for your own personal account. Coca. Who's going to do that? Who is going to be the initiator of that legal civil action?
Shouldn't we put it on the speaker's agenda? Because you see, and I'm just doing that because the Constitutional Court at some point said you as Parliament didn't exercise the executive authority. So if the AG sent it to the accounting authority and where appropriate went to the Speaker and said in your oversight collect money from Minister Kubaza, Speaker, I don't think he's going to make the same mistake that they made in the past. I really don't think they would make the same mistake. If they do, some of us, when we debate this method, we can emphasize it even in our debates as well. That particular clause is for this reason. But I do think it should go to Parliament. There's nobody else that can do it.
The issue is that you're always going to hold the accounting officer liable because the accounting officer hasn't done what the accounting officer is supposed to do. So even where it turns out that the cause of the loss or the person responsible for the loss is the EA. So, for example, the mayor made an official go and purchase something for the mayor that official wasn't supposed to purchase. Then the accounting officer must still hold the official liable because the official should not, in law, have done that. But so
the official rested court and said
that it's going to be exactly. So, we've had meetings with National Treasury on specifically this. They say in the municipal sphere, it's very right that the EAs there are making the officials do these corrupt things, and the officials are too scared to speak out. And we've said, well, in the way this is crafted, the official then has no choice, or at least the accounting officer has no choice but to rat out the executive authority. And Parliament will always have an oversight, because in any case, we plan to build in that the certificate also gets sent to the relevant, to Parliament to be sent to the relevant line function committee in any case.
All right, then we are comfortable. We'll argue further when we get there. Okay, this is the one where you and Cody are having a fight. Again, this is the second fight where you are saying that we should have an internal process. Internal process, not just open ombudsman type of thing, an internal process, and then that will give the accounting authority an opportunity to put his or her case, and then from there the AG's decision is final. Coley is saying, why have the internal process go straight to court? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, the other one saying, okay. Before we agree now, with what we currently agree on two issues and processing issues as such. Previous, if the statute was going to be issued only, it is currently in the current bill, but after the outcomes of the investigation. My concern was that why we have to create another internal resolution mechanism of which your statement is based on the outcome of the investigation. So if you have got a problem with the outcome of the investigation, then you must consult the court. But now with the two issues on those certificates, then the internal resolution mechanism is relevant.
Fine. All right? Okay? Mm-hmm. We take your suggestion. All right. Thank you. Order, please.
Yeah.
Right, so I was looking at the other document.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, were you guys considering this one when you... I was looking at it. You know, this one, for me, the AG must never be out of pocket. Yeah. And this seems to suggest to me that he's not going to be out of pocket. I know the concern that Goli raised of how does he predict what the costs are going to be, and who is agreeing or must consult upfront. But just look at this document here. This document seems to be taking us closer to where we want to get. All right? Honorable members can also look at it. We can look at it. I'm suggesting you do this, and we'll have an opportunity to fight with it when we come back. Is that all right, honorable members? I'm looking at our back. All right. You want to say something?
Yeah, I just want to know, because the AG hasn't had an opportunity to respond to this. They only responded to the previous law.
Yeah.
So will there be a chance for Mr. McQuay to respond to this?
Yes. No, we're saying both of you take this one.
Okay.
That's fine. You and them. But we are saying this takes us closer to the, what we have. So in you including it, include it after consultation with AG.
I understand, but I can give the feedback now that they generally... especially
in the start
of
the
idea of having access to the National Revenue Fund.
Is
here and there
a
concern about possible unintended consequences, but I'm sure we
can solve that. Now, National Revenue Fund, of course, we'll also argue that thing. I mean, there are some of us that have been saying that. And it's not going to be a problem, because what we're arguing is the whole funding of this thing called the state. Because if we get our top slides in Parliament, we can give it to the Chapter 9 institution. So there's no fear of being dependent on somebody or the other. But I think that's a discussion that's somewhere going forward. But we agree that for now, look at this AG and yourself and come up with something. So that's order C. That does with that one. I'll pick up two or three and I was trying to go through it as we can talk to them. Members can bring others if they have. This thing about undesirable, the definition, I think somebody was saying material, what you were saying, and you were saying material is used in IRBA and those type of things. Can we change it to material?
No, it is material.
It is there already.
I was saying the commenters were suggesting he reported the irregularity. Then the AG opted for material and I said, I supported the material because material is the umbrella term which encapsulates the reported irregularities.
Well, that is fine. Sure. All right, so that one we can see. The other one that I picked up was the international. I agree, anyway, there's no problem around the international. I don't know how other members feel.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the family protector was arguing that it's unconstitutional?
Yeah.
We support that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, before that there was something about the general laws amendment, but when
I'm going to get to that one.
I'll
get to the... okay. We dealt with those two certificates story that I put there. We dealt with the appeal. Debt recovery that we dealt with. And then... CAP, CRAP, whatever the case might be, there was somebody talking about returns should be put in there. My own view and other members can talk. My own view should be the best current practice, whatever that might be. Because it could be CRAP now and CAP tomorrow, and it could change next year. So we should just say you should get up to speed with the best current practice.
Okay.
Happiness?
Yeah.
All right. Regulations do order clear. His job to do.
But via COAT.
Yes,
That's
the regulation, we give it a blessing and it goes on.
That's already built in that it comes to COAT anyway, but do you want to public participation or advertising? So that's not in the
I am saying the current bill proposes that the AG should empower to establish a remuneration committee and also appoint members. The responsibility of this remuneration committee, among others, going to recommend the salaries and allowance of the AG to the independent commission, which then the independent commission will recommend to the president. That is the current form. Initially, before, it used to be scored, recommended to the speaker to the president. Then now, the commenters were raised concern with regard to this. They said that no, but there's a conflict of interest because the very same, this very same remuneration committee is going to be established by the AG, empowered AG to establish it. It's going to, at the end of the day, it's going to determine it's going to recommend on his or her salaries and benefits to this independent commission, then to the president. They said, no, there's a possibility of a conflict of interest. Then the AG disputed that, but what I suggested or recommended was that at least you must allow that AG to establish that, but in consultation with the SCOWEC, in consultation with us.
Let me why are you agreeing with that? Because you see, with our one, when I say our, I'm saying politicians, I serve on a committee that makes the recommendation, and there's no conflict of interest. We make the recommendations in Togo's office, there's a committee. Mm-hmm. We sit, make a recommendation on the basis of tax, on the basis of what parliamentarians do, and so on. That recommendation then goes to the square year or whatever commission. There's never been an argument of conflict of interest. Why are we then saying it? Because it's a recommendation. And the reason it's done is because the independent committee doesn't have the insight of how the AG works. Neither would it have the insight of how Parliament works. Because remember, that person is doing for a whole host of people. He could never be the expert on the judges, be the expert on magistrates, be the expert on parliamentarians. Now we want him to be the expert on the AG and on public protector. They should be doing it, recommending it to him, and he applies his mind. If you want to put SCOWEC, I just think we're adding another layer. But you think they must do this committee, must bring it to SCOWEC, SCOWEC must give it its blessing, go to the independent, because all these, whether SCOWEC or the, we just recommend it. Ours is not binding.
Mm.
The binding is only the one on the top. So I'm comfortable with this committee going forward, but let's take Zuba Zainab and then we'll come to you. And then Evan, if you want.
No, my view, I've highlighted to this even last, the other year, where I said, there is some sense of that time we're talking about the external audit committee, where we said we need to be very careful here about the conflict of interest, because at the end of the day you're auditing this person, but you have to go back and report to him. Now, why I say I agree with Okoli that would at least in consultation with us, that after they've done their recommendation, I hear what you are saying when we do our public for the office bearers, but I am saying after they've done their recommendation, those recommendations have to be presented to us because we're doing an oversight. That's my only argument that I'm saying I agree.
Okay. Honorable Chair, and then Honorable Adams, do you have any comments?
Yeah, Chair, you see, on this one I have some experience sitting on this call when we were doing the audit agenda on Saturday, the current audit. And even the previous AG, because what happened is midstream of his contract, the independent commission wanted to make representations to SCOWEC, which was the body that they had come to, and suggested to us that the salary and remuneration and perks that were included in the contract which the former AG signed with the president were incorrect. So what we did at SCOWEC now, and that's why I think it's important for SCOWEC to be involved.
Yeah.
What we did at SCOWEC, we said, all right, bring that committee, let's hear you out. And we heard them out. And they said, no. Then I said, but listen, here's a contract signed between the AG and the president for so many years with all your perks and everything else. Now you come midstream because you woke up from somewhere, a nightmare or a good dream, and say, no, we are underpaying the AG. Now that committee was appointed by the AG. So the independence first is kind of questionable because you're working for your master. And I'm saying that, you know, from experience. But when we questioned that committee, we found there were a lot of flaws in what they were proposing for. So we set up a subcommittee. It was Dion George, myself, and somebody else. Yeah. We went to Pretoria, I mean to Johannesburg, we consulted with these people, Alexander Ford, somebody else.
Yeah.
We sat in their offices, we interrogated them. Because halfway through the contract, they said, no, the AG must get a Chief Justice's salary and first.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the Act, it says something about a judge. Now, this committee comes to us in the midstream and says, top echelon means Chief Justice.
Mm-hmm.
And we said, no, it doesn't mean Chief Justice.
I
never and we argued. So I only went into the detail. But I think the process that we were involved in was extremely important. Because arising out of our report, then we took our report to Parliament, Parliament sent it to the President, and the President made whatever adjustments were necessary.
Still stuck.
Yeah, still. You're right. And then the perks of a house being provided in two centers.
Yeah,
centers.
You want to say something I didn't know, Kim?
No, Chair, just I wanted to remind you of the fact that because you were actually the chair of that committee, there's a reason for that, how can I say, ambiguous wording was the fact that at that point in time, there was a dispute who is the highest
in the
and that's the reason for it. So the intention was to link it to the highest level of who is the highest judge. So it's not. So that's why they
allowed
this
until
that
just to get that
context.
No,
but
you were there.
I did.
Yeah, he was there.
The PAA was my baby.
Yeah.
Okay,
could I also just share with the committee, in line with the team recommendation that a remuneration committee should also be independent, like our audit committee. We have actually already introduced, I don't need to give it to the agency for the future, but we have already introduced the fact that the committee will be independent. The only executive office will be the DIG. That's it. So it's in essence virtually an independent committee.
But there's no harm in taking what was done in the next thing. Come and consult us.
Yeah.
I don't know if you can do it.
Is that confused the issue?
Yes. No.
On who must be on the remuneration committee? Because what we've done in the meeting is we say there must be a remuneration committee. It must consist of five people, the majority of whom must be external.
Right.
Now what Paul is saying is that in appointing that remuneration committee members, you must come to Parliament as AG and say, these are the list of people that I propose. And you guys are saying something.
Yeah. No, we're talking something totally different.
This is what I'm saying. We're talking something different. But where your scenario is a little bit different now is that in those days it was Parliament that was making the recommendation on the salary. Now you've got the independent commission. So for me, practically, if you're going to have this remuneration committee giving some advice to the independent commission, but before giving that advice, they come to Parliament to say, do you agree with my
advice? Absolutely.
Say that's what you want.
We are. What we're saying is we're not interested in who makes up the committee.
Okay.
We'll argue it when we see that committee in our normal oversight of how independent it is. What we're saying is when that committee has applied its mind, before it goes to Judge Derrick, to say, give him 100 rand, they should consult us.
Exactly.
So, I don't know.
That's not with the appointment.
Not with the appointment,
no.
It's on the recommendation of the increment or whatever it might be.
But the consultation is
okay, so that was the last one. The last one is satisfactory. What is the thing about satisfactory explanation? You are saying.
No. Okay, Jay, thank you. The satisfactory explanation, I think what is also. It came from the public comment, from the commenter. They raised the issue that the satisfactory explanation needs to be defined, because it gives a leeway for AT to be subjective. Because in fact it is no longer relevant, because the AG now is no longer going to recover, because that was irrelevant when AG was going to recover.
Absolutely, yeah. Because then it was saying if he doesn't feel
satisfactory,
so it's no longer his baby. Those are the ones that
The satisfactory explanation was in regard to issuing the certificate. So in other words, I allow you an opportunity to make representations as to why I shouldn't issue that certificate. Then the accounting officer comes back and says, don't issue the certificate. The reason I haven't done anything in 12 months is because I've actually been sick in hospital and I only got back last week. Then you accept that. So the issue that was raised in the public hearings was that there must be criteria or something more that's applicable to how the AG exercises that decision to issue the certificate. So we were in agreement, but we said only once we determine the policy, whether he's going to act immediately on the 12 months or on the report, that we can build in those criteria. Because if we were going to act on the report, then the report becomes your national reason for issuing. But now that we've taken the report out, we have to think of other possible things which we've already been discussing, possible criteria, just to lessen the subjectivity. But subjectivity in and of itself is not something that is unique to what we've drafted. You'll find it in many pieces of legislation that says the minister must apply his mind to whether to grant a license or not. So it's not such a difficult legal concept. You can get around it because the test in court will be one of rationality. In taking that decision, did you apply your mind to something? It's still there, but we'll try and close the gaps when we're drafting.
I'm told that Fatima has got limited time. But I'm done with my one.
The technicals we'll deal with.
Is there anything else that
no.
members want to give them a mandate for before we leave? Let's take Dubazana and then take Singh and Adam.
The technical one, there is that proposal chairperson by Dr. Naidu. Do we agree with it? Where he proposed that instead of referring to the public accountants and auditors according to the, then we take auditing professional because we haven't approved that. There are a few proposals that she requested as Ufatima to whether do we agree with them. That is the first one, and the second one.
Well, just take that one. We agree on that one.
Yeah.
Because that's an obsolete.
Right.
It's an obsolete thing.
Oh.
The second one.
And then the second one is that she also requested that with the tier three. I'm sure that one is we've done with it. But with the third one was about to endorse the what the adoption or the recovery mechanism. To be designed by the Auditor General. You remember the Auditor General, the opening, right? The opening, designing the. Yeah. No, before that chair. It was on page 4.
Page 4 of
the right on the top of the hair, yeah. The recovery mechanism must be designed in such a manner that we agree on that.
Okay, yeah. Memorandum? No, I'm saying. You're saying on page 4.
Yes, Fatima was actually requesting that we need to approve on this proposal because those are the proposals that she mentioned. The first one is the one that I said about Dr. Naidu, and the second one was that about which has already been done on the TS3. But the last one is that when he was talking about point, he was talking about what point? On constitutional mandate, good. On the constitutional, when he was discussing that issue. On page 4, right on top, they said, for this reason, on page 4.
On this page 4 of her document.
Yes, her document.
Right.
Page 4, right on top there. For this reason,
yeah.
That
okay.
reason, yeah.
Right.
The recovery mechanism must be designed.
Yeah.
So I am saying, based on what she is proposing, that the Auditor General must design this. We have to endorse and say they have to do it, because it's not in the way forward. Is it there?
No. Are you guys together with us? You guys are there? Yes, but I'm saying to the banner saying we must endorse it.
Yes, on the way forward, Butch.
On the way forward, that the AG must do this?
Yes, Butch.
are you guys with that? Because well, I think what you're saying is that, they must take that into account.
Of course.
And the way forward means it must appear on in the legislation.
Yes.
All right. And are you sure it must appear in the legislation? Is it?
Yes. We find because we say it would be unconstitutional if the AG doesn't allow AOs an opportunity in terms of the existing legislation to do what they're supposed to do.
Okay.
Which is why we now, if we're not going to do the 6 months time frames, we'll just build it in that there must be sufficient opportunity. That will be
that
part
that
of
follows
that will be
well.
Follow part, and that will also follow part of that Audi. So when you give the Audi and make your decision, your indecision at the end of the process, you can say that notwithstanding that 3 months have passed and you should have, ought to have, could have done something, you haven't done something. It will be
yes.
different for different
yes.
purposes.
Yes.
Anything else, Mark?
No, not the chair. I would just, I think we'll have to then take a formal decision on whether or not we necessary to meet on Friday.
We're going to get there now.
And then I think maybe if we are not meeting on Friday, and we have to give them time, if the office of the AG can start looking in the next 2-3 weeks or whatever time they have or more, start looking at the regulations, start looking at regulations.
I can respond to that. The AG has sanctioned an internal implementation project. This is really about implementational alignment for the entire Act. And the drafting of regulations is one of the things that we have done.
Right. So
we
can do that sooner rather than later.
That's true, because if we need to look at it, without regulations, it's not really practical or implementable. It's not really easy to draft regulations. So ideally, we want to issue those regulations
all right. Then for the record, Sunday's minutes record, we are now 99% there with you. Well, 100% in terms of please go and clean it up, tidy it up to something that will be as close as possible to what we're going to take to the house. When we get back, you will come and present it to us. That this is what we've done, this is what it looks like, and we will then go close by close as MPs to see if we are happy, if we agree, and we'll take it to the house. But that will be the long and short of it, of course, and everything else that you guys have done. So I think we come back around about the 19th of April. Can we agree that sometime Cindy, through by the end of April, that this committee sits reconvened? I mean, we finish it now, that sometime end of April, beginning of May, we sit and receive what you guys have done over the recess period. Is that sufficient time for you? Okay.
Yes, yeah, so just beginning May, because there's a long weekend in April there and all sorts of things. But what I also suggest you do, Chair, is together with parliamentary media, do a statement on the progress that we've made. Especially so that the public out there know that we've taken their input very seriously.
Good.
That, you know, having to regard to all the input made by the public, we are making amendments and it's work in progress or whatever.
Okay.
Because I think this bill has caught the attention of many people out there.
All right. I'm looking around. Who's going to help us? Justice? Who's the number? Who's the
minister? No, I'll open it in line with justice and then...
Is it done? Yeah, we can have this discussion about that. We can make a press release of some sort of where we are and where we're going to take it from here. All right, honourable members, then that deals, thanks Cindy, that deals with us. Thanks Fatima, thanks AG. Then Cindy will let us know when we meet next. You guys will go and do whatever you need to do behind this. And our target for our own purposes is that sometime by the end of May, we want to take it to the National Assembly.
Generally start around June.
Yeah. All right, so that's the process. Thank you very much, guys and girls. The meeting is
adjourned.
Yeah,
sir. Thank you. 1 o'clock,
yeah.
Yeah,
1 o'clock, yeah. When?
Hey.
No. The accounting. There's another comment.
Hey.
Oh.
Yeah, too many comments. Are you going to close it?
You're not going to sit there.
Yeah, you're going to sit there. Yeah, you're going to sit there. Yeah, you're going to sit there. Yeah, you're going to sit there. Yeah, you're going to sit there. Yeah, you're going to sit there. Yeah, you're going to sit there.